Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land.
Eric, he says he's the human Don Kleppen, but isn't that what a robot Don Kleppen would say?
Exactly what a robot
Try to
Don
suck Kleppen. Us in and then destroy us with his laser torpedoes. Eric Zorn is here, the real Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. How are you, Eric?
Nice to see you. I would say if I were a robot Eric Zorn.
That's true.
I would say the same
thing.
That's
very true.
It's very
hard
to tell. Very hard to tell. I'm good. I'm feeling human today.
You wanted to talk some politics, so let's. What's going on?
Well, I think this Jussie Smollett story just keeps
going. Won't go away.
It's amazing. It just, more turns of the wheel.
Yeah.
We spoke about it last week.
Yeah.
Before the mayoral election, let us not forget that we had a big mayoral election.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? The news just goes so fast these days, doesn't it? Just so many turns. But, and I thought the Jussie Smollett story is like, 2 weeks old now? I think it was a Tuesday. It was 2 weeks ago.
Well, from the very beginning, it's 2.5 months old from the time
the surprise announcement caught everybody off guard that they were dropping these charges against Jussie Smollett.
Yeah.
And you'd think that we'd be done talking about it, but the story just seems to be growing.
Yeah.
And the most recent development was Saturday when there was a news conference at Operation Push with Jesse Jackson, Kim Fox, the state's attorney, and Bobby Rush spoke. Bobby Rush said that the Fraternal Order Police are racist and they're out for black people. And Jamal Green, a former mayoral hopeful, I don't think he was actually on the ballot, called the Blue Klux Klan, trying to suggest that this whole rift, this whole amount of discontent that's being expressed by police officers chiefs of police, a lot of white chiefs of police, actually, about the way Kim Fox is dealing with low-level crime, is racist. And so then Kim Fox and her people had this news conference where they basically were trying to fire back at this criticism that's been leveled at them. All of this has been a piece of yarn pulled out of the ball of string that is this Jussie Smollett story, where the crime that Jussie Smollett is accused of, was accused of, is a low-level crime. So, level 4 felony.
Felony sounds bad.
It sounds bad, but it's class 4, and it's not, you file a false police report. It's like pulling a fire alarm or something like that. But given all the circumstances involved in it, the fact that he's a celebrity, the fact that there were some hate slogans allegedly yelled at him, that had bleach poured on him, that he had
the noose.
A noose around his neck. They were shouting pro-Trump slogans. This made this a really high-profile case, and then to have it suddenly dropped as part of what Kim Fox says is her overall initiative to deal with low-level crime in this sort of sensible way. Like, hey, we got bigger problems to deal with, and we do have bigger problems to deal with. And I wrote about this case for my Sunday column, and I was hearing from people saying, have you noticed that we had 30 people shot, or was it 24 people shot in 30 hours over the weekend in Chicago? Like, we're getting to the summer violence season.
It's a bad weekend.
I don't see your level of outrage about that being as high as your level of outrage about the way Kim Fox is handle this case. And it is true, but there is this uniqueness to this story, the celebrity element, the fact that it's a really different story, the fact that all of us can understand what's happened here sort of on a basic level, which is that it looks to most people like Jussie Smollett got away with this, that he filed this false report for whatever reason, and that the state's attorney, they pursued this case, they investigated it to a fairly well, and then suddenly they decided, well, we're not going to prosecute. And our reporters did a major story over the weekend where they tried to pick apart sort of day by day, decision by decision, what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
How did this turn into this huge controversy that just won't end?
Mm-hmm.
And at the heart of this right now is that Kim Fox, the state's attorney, isn't telling us exactly what happened. If you remember, like right after she dropped these charges, her office came out and said, well, we thought he was guilty, that we had a good case against him. And this is part of our diversionary prosecutions, which they will do in cases. If they've got somebody who's arrested on a minor crime, they don't want to clog the court system. They don't want to clog the jails. They don't want to ruin somebody's life. They don't want to separate families over low-level nonviolent offenses. And I think that's to her credit. I think this is something that's a good initiative in general, which is like you don't want to be expending all your law enforcement resources when you've got a city where there's so much violence.
But normally I'd agree with that, but the amount of man hours that were spent trying to solve this case makes this a very different story.
This case was different.
Yes. Exactly right.
And it's sure because, without a doubt, because he was a celebrity.
Well, and I think that the most of the public would have been satisfied if Smollett had simply apologized, pleaded guilty.
He didn't do it. What should he apologize for, Eric?
Okay, you're right. Okay, I'm saying. This is where the problem is. He doesn't apologize. He doesn't plead guilty. And if they had just said, okay, you know, we're fining you $10,000 and go away.
Yeah.
I think most people would have been fairly satisfied with
that.
With an admission and an apology.
Yes, I agree.
I think people would have, the story would be over by now.
Yep.
If Kim Fox had come out and said, or her office had come out and said, the day that they let these charges go, if they said, you know, this case wasn't as strong as we thought, that the brothers, you know, just to refresh everyone's memory, the charges that he conspired with these two brothers with whom he was working, they're mm-hmm. bodybuilders and trainers, and he conspired with them to stage this attack.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had come out and said, you know, these guys weren't good witnesses, they changed their stories too much, they would not have done well on the stand, we don't think we could have gotten a conviction, we don't think we had proof beyond a reasonable doubt, we're dropping the case. I think the public would have understood that as well. They would have said, they might not have been happy about it, but that's what a prosecutor does. Prosecutor says, okay, look, there's a difference in what you can think, what you think is true, and what you can prove in court.
Yeah.
And we see that this happens all the time at the state's attorney's office. It happens all the time in the justice system, where you have a crime or something, and it looks like the person's guilty, but the witnesses aren't there. The evidence has disappeared.
Yeah.
Alibis show up. Whatever.
It happens.
It
definitely
happens. I think if she had said that. So that seems to be, that was her sort of phase two. She said that her office was saying, well, no, we had a strong case. But this was part of our diversionary thing. Then a couple of days later, when the public was not buying that at all, she comes out and says, well, we weren't certain we could get a prosecution. She said that. And so the question is, okay, why? Fine. Okay, you weren't sure. Why is that? And her office has just been silent about mm-hmm. that for a week. And she had an op-ed in the Tribune a week ago Sunday saying, oh, I couldn't be certain about this. So why? Why? And she hasn't said why. Her deputy hasn't said why.
That's what the problem is. No one's talking.
That is the problem. And I said, as I was saying, our reporters did this very in-depth story. Everybody was talking to them, including the defense attorney, Mark Garagos, the celebrity defense attorney for Smollett, who is raising all kinds of issues. He has a podcast, and on his podcast a week ago, he intimated that there was some sort of a sexual relationship between one of the brothers
and Jussie Smollett.
Jussie's gay, and he intimated that there was some sort of, he said, like, well, one of them spent the night with Jussie shortly before the attack. It's like, what? Like, mm-hmm. okay, so is that a motive to beat him up? Is mm-hmm. that a motive not to beat him up? I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but they're talking.
Do we know that part of the story to be true, or is that just
I asked the attorney for the brothers, and she said that was not true, and she had not.
Interesting.
She said she'd heard that from other, she'd been asked that question by some other reporters, and it's not true as far as she knows.
Yeah.
So you've got all this story is being told by everyone all around, but the person at the center of it, who has the ability, I think, even still, to come out and say, look, here's our file, here's what happened here.
Yeah.
Here's everything that happened. Here's why we had to make this decision. She could still salvage it, but right now it's just looking to the public and to these white police chiefs, like she's letting him go because he's a celebrity, maybe because he's a black celebrity. I mean, I don't really think that this originally was a racial question when the public was upset about this. I don't think the public was mad at Kim Fox because she's black. I don't think they're mad at Jussie Smollett because he's black.
Although Jussie Smollett made it racist.
Well, he said it was a racist attack.
He said it was a racist attack, but I think that the public anger about this was not based on that. It has become racially polarizing. It's just, that's why the story keeps growing in this really strange way, which is that suddenly you've got Bobby Rush and Operation Push calling insinuating that everybody who's criticizing Kim Fox over this is doing this because she's a powerful black woman.
Yeah.
And then you've got the FOP standing up there with this big group of all white police chiefs criticizing Kim Fox, which looks like it has a racial component. So it's become this sort of delicate situation, and we're having it happen right as we're going into the violent season, as we saw this weekend. When it gets warm, this city gets to be very dangerous in certain neighborhoods.
But when you say, of all the people blindsided by this case, Eddie Johnson would be at the top of the heap, wouldn't he?
Eddie Johnson was, and he was critical at first. He's toned it down some lately.
A little bit.
He's pulled back on criticizing. He wants to just move ahead, I think. And he realizes, as most people realize, as I think Kim Fox realizes, which is that the police have to work cooperatively with prosecutors, that they, you know, the beginning of the of Law and Order, you know, these are the two institutions that together make our streets safer, enforce the law, bring people to justice. And we need that. We absolutely need good policing, and we need good prosecutorial work. We need to keep bad people off the street. That's all a given.
We need them on the same team, but
you've got them at odds right now over this stupid case.
I
go back to, and people, you know, I'm critical of Kim Fox here. I was supportive of her. I was highly critical of her predecessor, Anita Alvarez. I thought she botched a bunch of cases. And I was really kind of enthusiastic about Kim Fox, and I think some of what Kim Fox has been doing in her office has been really good. I think she's undermining all of that with what she's been doing with this case. She's making people think that she's not about justice, that she's about clout, she's about celebrity.
Should she step down?
No, I don't think she should step down. She's running for re-election in a year, less than a year. It'll be March. It'll be 11 months from now. There'll be the primary for state's attorney, Democratic primary, which is essentially the election.
But people will hold a grudge. I mean, Toni Preckwinkle, every time we think of her, we go, oh, no, she taxed our Mountain Dew,
Our Mountain Dew, and she, you know, I think she paid a really heavy price for that.
Yeah.
And it was, she had actually rescinded that tax, a year and a half or so, 2 years earlier, but it stuck with people. That's a whole other topic to talk about.
Is
how in the world did we get a 74% landslide victory for Lori Lightfoot? I predicted 50. I was at a forum a week before, and I predicted that she was going to win, 56-44, the same ratio that Rahm Emanuel beat Chuy Garcia four years earlier. So that seemed about right.
But
people thought, well, that's kind of ambitious.
I know. But we'll talk more about this and other topics. Eric Zorn is here. You want to jump in? 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Little musical interlude.
Love the music. Coming up, tune into the stream and hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold on television. I just watched a television show that is so funny and so sad at the exact same time. It's very hard to pull them off simultaneously. I'll explain what the show is and how you can see it. It's sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60 Minute Men.
Go back to Eric Zorn.
Is it Veep?
No, it is not. That's a great guess, but it is not
Veep. It's not a great guess.
I watched that last night. It's great.
Terrible. What a great show.
Yeah. Oh, I have a new show, a new series that I watch that I want to talk to you about on the stream as well.
All right.
Since I'm not on the stream, we've been watching This Is Us. Do you guys watch that?
Yes.
Love This Is Us.
That's such a good show.
Very moving.
Yes. Really enjoy that.
And the season's over already.
Well, but see, not for me because I
have caught
up. Oh, you
have a few more episodes?
I'm still streaming. I'm still backlogged.
All right.
Anyway. So it's been this whole mayor's race.
Yes.
Just this.
You're surprised at the landslide.
Of a victory. Well, and the latest news today, I don't know if you guys heard this, was, you know, there's this whole controversy over Lincoln Yards, which is this development near Northwest Side. Mm-hmm. This is the former Finkel Steel factory. It's an Armitage and the expressway, basically. Mm-hmm. You know that area? It's like this prime piece of land. Sterling Bay is going to develop it. Huge project. And it's been kind of rushed through the zoning process. And people and Lori Lightfoot and Toni Preckwinkle, as they're campaigning, were saying, like, hey, let's slow our roll up on this a little bit. We're not really sure, especially with the tax incentive that's given to Sterling Bay. And they were going to vote on it today in the finance committee in city council, and then they were going to vote, the full council was going to vote on Wednesday, kind of getting it done before Mayor-elect Lightfoot takes office in the middle of next month. And just today, Rahm Emanuel, just this morning, sent out a news release saying, in deference to the mayor-elect, we're going to hold off on considering this.
And what do you think is going on?
It's a $1.3 billion tax incentive for Sterling Bay to do infrastructure improvement and so on. I think that Mayor Emanuel has realized the size of Lori Lightfoot's victory, and the fact that it wasn't just Lori Lightfoot, it was other people in the council. Pat O'Connor, the powerful finance committee chair who had just taken over for Ed Burke, who was the finance committee chair. These are sort of old lions of the city council, were voted out. Burke has not been voted out, but O'Connor was voted out. And there's just been this change in council. The voters have really expressed, I think, a desire for change. And I really think that's the only thing that, to me, explains the size of this landslide that Lori Lightfoot won, is that voters had just decided that Lori Lightfoot was new and Tony Preckwinkle was old, because there wasn't a ton of difference between these two candidates in terms of policy positions, that they were very, very similar. And so that's why I was thinking it was going to be kind of close, and that this thing that Lori Lightfoot being somebody new was going to be a smaller factor.
Yeah.
But voters are really, really in the mood to have Chicago have a change for Chicago, and I think that's what we saw in this race. And
so
I think Mayor Emanuel this morning realized, like, okay, let's just hold off. I will pass this on to the next mayor and let her decide about this tax increment financing plan for Sterling Bay and for this new thing. And Lincoln Yards, if it does go through, is going to be a major development up there. It's going to be high rises, residences. You know, it is not just a housing development.
You're saying if it goes through, is there reason to believe it won't?
Well, no, it's probably going to go through. I think it's such a prime piece of land, and the zoning has been approved. It's the financing that needs to be okay. And how much is the city going to help?
Right.
Do things like, you've been up there. You know, the Armitage.
I've passed by, sure.
The Armitage way that it kind of jogs and goes over the river. It's terrible. It needs to be fixed, straightened out, and they're going to pay money for that. So. It's going to happen. The question is, who's going to pay for it? Who's going to be on the hook for it? So I'm excited about Mayor Emanuel backing off and the new mayor sort of already kind of taken over. Yeah.
Eric, thank you.
Good to see you guys.
Read Eric, of course, in the Chicago Tribune, or listen to him here every Monday.
I do
or also
both.
The Mincing Rascals. Mincing you can do
Rascals.
That as well.
Nominated again for a Lissagor Award.
It's, how about that?
I know. I don't have to wear to the
year
ceremony.
Last year.
If I wear the same thing to the ceremony,
people will talk.
I know they will talk.
Thank you, Eric.